Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast that is exclusively available to you as a Circle member. These episodes are a deeper dive down the holistic trauma healing rabbit hole. You will find yourself challenged, empowered, inspired, and maybe even a little bit uncomfortable. But remember, we're getting to the root of how trauma has affected every aspect of your existence, and that's not always quick or easy. By being part of the Trauma Healer Circle, you are already consciously creating your best possible reality and weaving a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. I'm so honored you're in my circle.
Hello, hello, Circle members. Welcome to your second bonus episode for August of 2021. I am excited to be welcoming one of our very own Circle members, Evelyn Hale, to the bonus podcast episode today. However, before we dive in to talking about inner child work and how to work with your inner child, I want to just remind you that I am still accepting applications for my one-on-one holistic trauma healing coaching program. If you're interested in working one-on-one with me, this is going to be an intense, focused, committed, dedicated 12 weeks of, you know, just inner child work, of course, trauma healing, nervous system tools and resources, boundary setting, spiritual growth and development, awareness, consciousness, being in the body. Like it's all going to be there. But what makes it so special is that it's all individual for you. Because I don't believe in making blanket recommendations for people. I believe that each person is unique and your needs and your story and what will work for you is just as unique as you are. And I don't really have the opportunity to make unique recommendations for people unless I can work with them one-on-one. So that is the beauty of a program like this. So I'm still accepting those applications. I will be for at least another week, probably until the end of August, excuse me. And then I'll go through all those applications and make my selections sometime in September. But that application is still open. I am only going to choose people who have applied for the program first because I want to make sure that we're a good fit to work together. It's going to be a time and energy and money investment for you. And I want to make sure that we're a good fit. I want to make sure we're going to be a good fit to work together before you make that commitment. So, yeah, that application is going to be linked below. And one more quick thing before we dive in, I have drawn a card for you this week for this bonus episode. I drew a card for you from my Angels and Ancestors Oracle deck. I've never drawn from this deck before on the public podcast or on this one. So I will post a picture of the card that I drew and I will also link to this deck. It's a really lovely deck. I think I say that about all of my decks, but my husband really loves this deck. So the card that I drew for you before I came on was the Sage card. And the message of this card is to be willing to go the whole road and back again. This will allow you to be the best you can possibly be. The Sage represents the wise one within. When this card arises, it shows that you are preparing to become a great and insightful teacher to your peers. It guides you to take notes, as the wandering yogi is on this card, because your knowledge and life experiences can impart incredible insights to those with whom you come into contact. This card is also about observation and becoming more aware of who you are and of all your inner workings, because that awareness can bring you more clarity to your decisions. Devotion is a powerful energy. Right now, angels and ancestors want to acknowledge how committed you are to your growth. Your continued dedication to this aspect of your life has been recognized, and your understanding that you are not only a body but also a soul is all you need to continue growing and expanding. The energy of oneness is offering itself to you now, and it's important you take some time to integrate it all so that you can be supported and guided by it. This is what the divine wants for you. Make a note of experiences or teachers making themselves known to you at this time because you are going to share those teachings one day too. So I don't know what that has to do with today's episode, but that's the card I drew for you. And now I don't want to make you wait any longer. I am excited to welcome one of our own to the podcast. I have Evelyn. If you have attended any of our Circle Zoom calls, you have met Evelyn before. She's fantastic. And today we're going to talk about the inner child. And I don't really have an agenda for this. I think I'm just going to let Evelyn riff on the inner child. My husband and I have hired Evelyn recently. She is our relationship coach currently. Working with her has been really, I don't want to say it's been fun. It's been, no offense to you, Evelyn, but it's been deep. It's been very exploratory. She asks really hard questions and she's not letting, I don't know what you're letting my husband get away with, but you're not letting me get away with anything. So I feel very coached, which is great. It's great. So anyway, something that came up in our coaching session this past week was me being with my inner child. And I know I expressed to you some level of like annoyance with my inner child and just like how needy she seems to be and how sometimes in my current state, I'm just like, haven't we dealt with this already? Shouldn't we be past this already? Please catch up. And you really challenged me on that. And obviously that's not a healthy way to deal with your inner child. Can you talk about the inner child and let's dive into connecting with our inner child, how to recognize maybe what we're dealing with in our lives currently as a manifestation of our inner child being like, hey, pay attention to me, love me. I need you to be the responsible, caring adult in my life right now. And then what are some practical ways we can do that? So does that sound good to you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is such an important topic. And people, I think, get a wrong idea of what inner child healing is. I've talked to a few clients who thought they were doing inner child work, and they were to a certain extent. But I guess I'll start by saying what most people think it is and then what it really is. So most people think inner child healing is about nurturing and almost indulging your inner child. We all have various parts of ourselves that are stuck at different levels of maturity, and we can access those parts of us anytime. You can remember back to certain points in your life and you can access that part of you, whatever age that was, at any time. But there, for most people, there's usually an age where you stay stuck, at least until you work with it, and then you mature or you at least make some peace with whatever that age is. So whatever age it is for the listeners, it's about what most people think inner child healing is about, connecting with that age, whatever, let's say it's 5, and providing them with the comforts that they didn't receive. So giving yourself extra nurturing, extra love, taking bubble baths, wrapping up in blankets, snuggling, just like self-care. I think people equate inner child healing with self-care, but as when a lot of people are starting to wake up to, self-care isn't always about the indulgence aspect of self-care, right? Like sometimes self-care is about discipline and doing the hard things. So that's where I ended up having to dive in myself, was going beyond like self-care level of inner child healing and going into some deeper, I would say, like shadow work. So it's all very much interlinked, like inner child healing and parts work, subconscious dialoguing, shadow work. I think of all of those things as being in the realm of the body, because it all happens below the neck for the most part. Like you're using your mind to access those things. So of course the mind's involved, but it's not coming from a mental place. It's coming from a physical subconscious place. So people, and even I sometimes find myself getting a little bit lost between, are we talking to a part? Are we talking to an inner child? Or are we talking to like just the shadow? Like what exactly are we talking to? And I don't know that it matters so much to know exactly what you're talking to, as long as you're trying to access something that's been suppressed, something that's been hidden, and then letting it identify itself down the line. I think that's really important to know, is that you don't have to exactly know like even what age you're talking to when you're trying to access your inner child. You just have to go in with the intention of revealing and understanding and curiosity. So let me pause there for a second and see if you have any questions.
Yeah. My question is, how do you know if what you're dealing with in your present reality is the inner child coming up to receive some love and attention and some healing. Like, how do you know that it's your inner child and not just the situation that you're dealing with in the present? Like, how would a person be like, okay, I have this pattern in my life and I know it's because I need to heal my inner child and give my inner child some love and attention. Like, I don't default to that even still. Even years into this, I still don't default to, oh, what's coming up in my life right now is my inner child coming out and needing some nurturing. So how would a person?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say 9 times out of 10, it is your inner child. Like, we can trace it back to the inner child. So when in doubt, like, it probably is. And it really is about having that conversation. So if you're sitting there and you're like, okay, I'm triggered and I'm not sure what's triggering me, it's really important that we don't automatically grab for the knowledge of what it is. It's important that we witness the trigger. We witness ourselves having this reaction and we go, that's interesting. Evelyn's having a reaction that seems disproportionate to the situation. So that's usually how we notice the trigger. That didn't seem like a normal reaction. And then you just have to explore, almost like you're unpacking a box and you're not sure what is in the box. So instead of seeing that there's a box in front of you and going, oh my God, what is this box? Holy shit, this box is full of stuff. I didn't even know this box was here. You really have to go into it with a gentleness and with an attitude of, oh, interesting. Okay, I wasn't really prepared to deal with this box today, but let's just see what's in it. And let's not make any judgments or assessments of what this really means until we've fully unpacked it. But the mind tends to go, oh my God, there's a box here. And like, where did this come from? And I'm so unprepared for this and I'm blindsided. And it goes into this narrative and this story that makes it harder to address. So even the question of, like, in the moment when you're triggered and you're wondering, even that, I would say, just don't let yourself go down that road even, because sometimes these things do not become clear until days later. If you have a dream, sometimes I really lump all the stuff in with dream work too, because it's all so shadowy. A lot of times we'll have a dream and we'll immediately go on Google and be like, what does it mean that I was braiding this woman's hair, but that it was only on the left side of her body? Let's read about that. What if we just gave ourselves some time to let that imagery come through and speak to us? So I think it's really about trusting that the message is coming to you. It's not going to come all at once. It's going to come little by little if you're gentle. So it's about gentleness.
Yeah. I like that. That's really beautiful. So I feel comfortable sharing with the circle the inner child moment that I had last week. And you know about this because you coached us through it. But the short story is that our doorbell in our house has not worked for several years and it hasn't been a problem in the past, mostly because we don't miss somebody coming to our house because we have two dogs that yap every time somebody pulls in the driveway. So we haven't really had much of a need for a doorbell. But my husband, who is currently fun employed, has been home. He was let go from his job a couple months ago. So he's been home for the past 2.5 months and he's been having a grand old time just fixing and doing a lot of projects that have needed to be done around our house that he didn't have time to do. And so tiny little thing shouldn't have mattered to me at all because he's been taking care of everything else. But he ordered not a traditional style doorbell that he would hook up to our existing doorbell, because I think we're just going to get rid of the existing one because it just doesn't work and it can't be fixed. But he ordered this thing where you put a battery powered button on the outside of your house and then the inside you have the bell like plugged in somewhere. So it sends a wireless or a Bluetooth signal. Anyway, he was testing it out last week and he had plugged it in right in between the bathroom door and my bedroom door. And I happened to be in the bathroom getting ready and he tested it out and it made this really loud sound all of a sudden. And I mean, I didn't even have a split second to think about what was happening. Like, I just went into this very reactive mode and I was like, what is that? It sounds like a siren just went off in our house. And he was like, I'm just testing the new doorbell. And I was like, why do we even need a doorbell? We're living just fine without a doorbell. I don't understand. And he was looking at me very confused because my reaction was like way over the top for what the situation was. And so he and I talked about it. We talked about it with you. It was obviously an inner child moment happening. I even explained to my husband that it felt like my little 8-year-old self was like, what is happening? What's going on? What are these loud noises? Why is nobody explaining to me what's going on? It really did feel that way. And thankfully, we have a little friend who is also 8 years old, and she frequently experiences really big emotions. And it's really beautiful to watch David with her, because when she's having a big emotion, he will just take her aside and he will just gently say, "Hey, it seems like you're having some really big feelings. Would you like to talk about it? Would you like me to sit here with you while you cry? Like, what do you need?" And it's really beautiful to watch that. So my way of helping him to understand how he could support me in that moment was to treat me like her. "Hey, it seems like you're having some really big feelings. I don't understand how you're feeling, but I want to. Can you help me understand how you're feeling?" And it was a great conversation, and I feel like we've moved on from it. But as you said, sometimes days later, you get new insights. And I had a new insight actually this week that I haven't shared with you yet, Evelyn. But the new insight that I had was that a lot of things happened to me whenever I was a kid that weren't explained to me. Like, nobody checked in with me and told me, "Hey, we're moving. Like, this means like new house, new school, like we're moving." And then after we had moved, "Hey, we've been here for a week. How are you feeling? Hey, we've been here for a month. How are you feeling?" Like, these are things that we've done with our kids, because we've moved several times. And I think without even really knowing what the root of it was for me, every step of the way that we've ever made any life changes as a family, like, I've almost coddled my children through it, just trying to explain everything and ask them, "How do you feel about this? Do you have any questions? If there's anything you want to know, just come and ask. Nothing's off limits." But I realized, like, that was never given to me as a child. And what I realized this week was that 8-year-old me that had this very strong reaction to the doorbell, it was also not just the sound that startled me, but also the fact that, like, there was a change that had been made and nobody talked to me about it first. And nobody, like, explained to me, "Hey, I'm testing out the new doorbell. I'm plugging it in right here. It might be loud. Just want you to know we can adjust the volume, but, like, let's just see how it works." And I know it sounds silly to explain to an almost 40-year-old woman about a doorbell like that. And of course, like, I wouldn't expect my husband to even feel the need to do that, because again, like, we're almost 40. He should be able to fix the doorbell without me throwing a fit over it. But that's what came up for me as I was just chatting with my inner child a little bit more this week, was that a lot of things happened to her that weren't explained and that she didn't understand, and she wasn't given the opportunity to ask questions, and she wasn't given the opportunity to for someone to check in with her and ask her how she felt. And so this was like a representation of that for me. And so yeah, that's just what came through. I don't really have a question. I'm just sharing that with you.
Yeah, no, it's a great story. And I think hopefully the listeners will relate to that, or something like that happening to them. And that's the thing about when you're triggered, it's hard to differentiate between who is having the reaction in the moment. And that's what's confusing, because you're having a reaction, and you're usually, what happens is your mind goes to point a finger and say, "You shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have done that." And then your higher self or your conscious self, whatever, it'll come in at some point. It just depends on how much work you've done and how aware you are. At some point in the process, it'll come in and go, "Okay, wait a minute. Maybe it wasn't there. Maybe they aren't wrong. Maybe I overreacted, or it wasn't intentional." But like, that first instinct is, "You're wrong. Why did you do this to me?" So anytime there's a voice — this is a tip, I guess, like something for people to remember or write down — is anytime the inner dialogue is, "Why did you do that to me?" That is a sign of, you need to pause and really ask yourself, is anyone really doing anything to you? Like, really? Most of the time, even when we get cut off in traffic, people are driving like assholes. They're not doing it to you.
Right.
They don't care about you.
They're not even thinking about you.
Right. They just care about them, their mission, like where they're going. And it's not about you. And that took me a really long time to learn. But it's the same with everything in life. People are doing it to you. They're doing it because they've got a picture of what they are trying to achieve, or they're inside themselves. So they're so inside themselves, they can't be doing anything to you. Even if someone says something shitty to you and they're being an asshole, it's not even so much them doing something to you. It's about them expressing their own frustration and their own anger. You know, that's really hard for the inner child to see and process in the moment. So what I like, the image that was coming to me as you were telling that story, was one of like your higher self or your conscious self, the part of you that is the parent, let's say, like the parent in the system. So we all have the system is made up of our ego and our inner child and our conscious self and our higher self and our subconscious. And it's, we are a society. Our whole system is a society. So the part of the society that is the parent needs to step up and provide unconditional love in that moment, as opposed to throwing the trigger out. Instead of it being like, you here, you just fucked up, so now you have to give me comfort. Instead of doing that, it's about expressing like, whoa, this kid, this system is having a big reaction. How can I step in and provide it with the nourishment that it needs without even knowing which child it is? Like, if you consider it a society and there's parents on board, or there's one parent on board, if imagine yourself having multiple kids, even if you're not a parent, just imagine that you're responsible for multiple beings. It doesn't really matter which one's crying, does it? Like, do you have to know? You don't, you just have to, like, if your baby needs food, you give it food. You don't say, you know, exactly why do you need food? Or I just fed you. You might think that, but it's really about just providing that need, as opposed to immediately lashing out and blaming the other person, because they can't actually provide you with what you need. Mm-hmm. That's the pattern that we get into. We marry people, we date people, and we look to people to meet those parenting needs that we didn't have. And I think that's the most painful part of this journey of healing trauma, is accepting that is not possible. That, to me, that was the most painful part of my journey, was accepting that. And there was a real grief, a long grief process in knowing, like, my mind knew it, but my system didn't want to believe it. So every time I would work through like a wave of, it's not his problem to solve, it's mine, I would grieve, because I believed that, like, the part of me that wanted to have someone come and save me had to let that go. And that was very painful. I don't know if it's been like that for you.
It totally has. Yeah. Especially since we started working with you. I'm not trying to discourage anyone. If anything, it's an endorsement to work with you, because that's what a coach does, right? Like, they challenge you on your shit. They like tell you how to do it in a better way. They make you practice. That's what they do. They're not there to be your friend. And I think you and I have a relationship outside of our coaching that allows us to be friends, which is great. But inside the container of the coaching, like, you're my coach and I'm your player or whatever. That's definitely been coming up for me. And I think a lot of the reason, and I think this is the case for everyone, but my story in particular, is I got married at such a young age, and I was 19 years old when I got married. I wasn't even fully grown up yet. And in a lot of ways, in doing the work that I've been doing with you these last 5 weeks, like, I've seen how I even got stuck at 19. And I would even say my 19-year-old self is still part of my inner child. Like, I would still classify that, because it's that part of me that feels insecure. It's that part of me that doesn't believe I can provide for myself because I've never had to. It's that part of me that doesn't know that I could be financially independent. It's that part of me that, like, was immature and not fully developed yet, who got married and became a mature, fully developed adult alongside someone else who was also maturing and becoming a fully developed adult. And so that has been really hard for me to, I've never experienced like true independence, really, ever. And aside from getting a divorce, which I don't want to do, I'm not going to experience true independence inside of my marriage. And so it's like trying to work with my inner child and those parts of me that got stuck at a certain age. Eight seems to be a pretty common age that keeps coming up for me as an age that I got stuck at. Like, 14 is another sort of, I got stuck at that age in some ways, 19. But yeah, it has been hard to realize that the person that I go to, my husband, I go to him for comfort, and I don't know how to go to myself to comfort myself sometimes. In some ways I do. Like, I did a pretty significant amount of inner child work whenever I was tapering off of benzodiazepines the first time. After I left the mental hospital, I was on a cocktail of psych meds, and one of the meds I was on was clonazepam, which is a benzodiazepine. I have no regrets taking it, and I was able to wean myself off and everything was okay. But while I was weaning myself off of that drug, and I was having to go very slowly because I was trying to minimize any withdrawals that I was having. It took me 4 months to get off 1 milligram. But anyway, as I was doing that, I felt all of this anxiety and feeling unsure and feeling like this was going to last forever and this was going to be awful. And I had all that coming up and I started going for walks every afternoon. And on my walks, I would literally start talking to my inner child. And I would tell her like, okay, Lindsay, like I know what's happening right now feels really scary. I know that every day it feels hard and you have these like weird symptoms that you're having, but you're only having these symptoms because you're coming off of this medication. You're not having these symptoms because you're mentally ill. You're not having these symptoms because you're like, you need to go back to the hospital. You're not relapsing with anxiety. Like you're literally only feeling this way because your body is chemically adjusting to coming off of this pharmaceutical medication. I've got you. Like, and every day I would just walk and I would just, it makes me cry like thinking about it. I would just like talk to her like that. And I haven't done that since. And working with you has made me realize that that's not something that you just do whenever you're going through one really hard time. That's like something that you do all the time is to like go for walks and talk to your inner child out loud. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. That's important that we learn to do that. And like I'm a parent, so I have some experience with this and hopefully some of the listeners are parents. But even if you're not, I think you can imagine what this might be like. But when your child comes to you and they're hurting, like all you want to do is take away the pain. That's all you want to do. And you'll go to great lengths to stop them from suffering. But that's the same, that same instinct that we have with our real children is the same instinct we have with our inner children. And that's why we avoid dealing with them because we don't have a solution. We don't have medicine. We can't just give our inner child Tylenol and then they go to sleep and they're fine. They actually have to bear the burden of the pain. And so Lindsay's talked about this so much. And I think you do such a great job of explaining the binary belief system. And it's hardwired into us to believe in these like life and death scenarios. Like I'm either going to die or I'm going to live. And so in the moment of emotional pain, even though you're not like getting chased by a bear, it's not a real physical threat. The emotional pain feels so great that you do feel like you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And so instead of facing that pain and like being with your inner child and just sitting with them as they experience that suffering, you would just rather shut them off so that you don't have to experience it and hope that they're okay. You send them to their room and you're like, I think you'll be okay. But meanwhile, there's just immense suffering that they're going through on their own. And that's where the apologies come in. And what happened with me, I'll share a quick story. So when I was 12, I had a weird experience of the lights coming on in my memory. I don't remember much before the age of 12. I have a handful of memories, but it's pretty much dark and it's always been dark. And I always thought that was normal. But as I became an adult, I realized, oh, that's not actually normal. Most people have memories before the age of 12. So was it last year or the year before? I think it was last year. I started to realize, no, it was actually more than that. It was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. I started to realize that what had happened to me at age 12 could have been some sort of personality splitting, or, you know, there's different psychological terms for it. I don't know all of them. I don't really know what happened, but I know that something did happen and it doesn't matter to me what it was, but something happened. The lights came on. So it's like all of the pain and the trauma that happened pre age 12, it was like my inner child was in the dark. She was like locked in the dark. I wasn't accessing what happened to her. I, to this day, still don't know fully what happened to her, but I know it was traumatic. And then at age 12, I started to have memories. Last year, I had to do some deep inner child healing with pre-age 12 me. So up to age 12, I had to do some inner child work with her. And what I found was that she was just deeply alone and she felt deeply abandoned by me because of what had happened. Now, the confusing part of this is that I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not like, I didn't do it on purpose, but in a way I did do it. So parts of my psychology did it. It was a survival instinct. So if I get stuck in my ego, will say, you don't have anything to be sorry for, so you don't need to apologize. However, when you have a child and your child goes through pain and suffering, you don't have to be sorry because you caused it. you can just be sorry that it happened. Mm-hmm. And that apology is very healing. So I sat with her for days on end and like really witnessed her. And I didn't want to. I was working with a coach at the time, and she facilitated this sort of dialogue between the 12-year-old version of me and now. And it was interesting because I was witnessing, it's really helpful to have somebody help you work through that. So I was witnessing this dialogue that was going on between little me and big me. And I was noticing like the conscious older version of me was like really irritated at her, like angry at the 12-year-old version. Like, why are you so whiny? Like, why can't you just get over this? I have done everything for you. Like, I have treated you so well. I've given you everything you want. Why can't you just let this go? And it was a fear of sitting with her and letting her express all of it. But when I did, that's when I became fully integrated, I would say. I do believe that I am fully integrated with my parts now because I can sit with them. And it was a really hard process, but I can say on the other side, it's not as bad as you think it is. You're so scared, you're like kicking and screaming, but when you give space to your inner child to fully express to you, what you'll find is that it's not an ocean. Like we think it's an ocean that we're going to drown in. It's not, it's manageable. Like it is manageable. It might feel that way. And it feels like we'll never, ever stop crying. Lindsay, like you do eventually stop crying. And then there might be more waves of that, but you don't become debilitated by it if you truly let yourself feel it.
I think not just with the inner child, but like for me, the trauma healing and trauma excavation journey itself has not been as bad as I thought it would be, like the whole thing. And that doesn't mean that atrocious things didn't happen to me, like they did. But I would encourage people who are afraid to do this because they're afraid of what's going to come up. They're afraid of remembering something really awful. It's if I've forgotten, there's a reason I've forgotten. I don't want to know. Like it's okay to feel that way. And sometimes you don't have to remember, like your body knows and that's enough. But I can say that I never felt at any point of my healing journey, I never felt like I was drowning or even close to drowning the way that I did when I was like at my worst, sick and like mentally, emotionally, soul sick, suicidal. Like it has not been as bad as that was.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I really believe that we become like soul sick and suicidal because of the fear. Yeah. It's not because of the pain. It's because of the fear of the pain. And so we become so collapsed, and like, there's this concept of collapse, like contraction and expansion. So when we collapse or contract around our fear, that makes it worse. So when we like notice, oh my God, I'm scared of this pain. Notice your body. If your body starts to hunch over, your shoulders collapse, and you go more into that fetal position, which isn't always, it's not always a bad thing. I'm not against crying in the fetal position. That could be very helpful and healing, but notice if that's your go-to. If your go-to is to just collapse, try opening up, try expanding the body and feeling the pain. Try it, because it's actually very empowering to know that we're not going to drown or die in this abyss of pain. It's the fear of the abyss that makes it seem impossible. And I've walked so many people through like inner child dialogues. And it's funny because they're always, the inner child is always in, we go through these kind of visualizations. So they're always either at the bottom of the ocean, or they're buried in a spiral in the middle of the earth, or they're always somewhere really hidden, really deep, really dark. And then when we access them, all that inner child wanted was to be held and seen and brought back up. And that's where you can access your inner child, and then you can invite them back up. Oftentimes we'll invite the inner child back up into the heart space down from wherever it was, and we'll create a room for it. And we'll make a bedroom that's like fun for whatever age. If you're age 8 and you loved like Legos and Transformers, then make your room be that theme. Like literally visualize that and imagine yourself bringing your inner child back up into that space so that they're not feeling abandoned and disintegrated from you.
Yeah. So what are like practical, if you can give, I know it's hard because it's very situation dependent and age dependent on the age of your inner child or whatever, but to the best of your ability, what are some like practical ways that if somebody was to turn off this podcast and be like, okay, I need to like let my inner child come up, I need to access him or her, like where could they start?
Good question. So for total beginners who have never done any kind of dialoguing with themselves or different parts of themselves, one really good way to start is to have a written dialogue and to do it with your non-dominant hand. So if you're right-handed, you're going to use your left hand. And if you're left-handed, you're going to use your right hand. And non-dominant handwriting seems to help us access parts of ourselves that aren't so mental. It's obviously going to be difficult to write with that hand, the non-dominant hand, but I found it very helpful early on. And so what that looks like is you'll take your dominant hand and you'll write like your name. So if your name's Mary, you'll write Mary, like you're going to write like a play, like lines of a play. So you write Mary, colon, and then whatever your question is. So let's say you want to ask your inner child, is there anything you're struggling with right now? So you'd write, is there anything you're struggling with right now? Then you go to the next line and you write inner child, or you can write I. Then you switch to your non-dominant hand and you let that pen or pencil just start to move across the page. Even if there's nothing coming out, just start to move the pen and it'll start to squiggle. And then eventually you'll get a word and maybe multiple words. And that's how we start to connect. And you'll just go back and forth. So let's say the inner child says maybe just one, like usually you don't get a lot in the beginning. So maybe they just say, hurting. So then you'll go to the next line and you'll write Mary. And then you'll say, what are you hurting with? And then you go to the next line, inner child, and you let them speak again. So if you continue to practice that, you'll get better at it and you'll start to get like more words and sentences. And it'll be usually what I find with people is it can be a little freaky depending on your openness to things like that, but it can be a little freaky because you're like, wait a second, I didn't think that. The mind didn't think that is part of, let's just call it a rite of passage on the healing journey when you start to realize that your parts actually do have thoughts and beliefs. But push past that and just continue to access it. And eventually what that turns into is you don't need paper or pen anymore. You can just have that dialogue by being inside your body, by closing your eyes. I like to think of it as diving down. Like when I'm talking, when the conscious mind is asking a question, that's adult me. And then I'll just see myself diving down into the body and reaching and looking for the answer. And then the answer will just bubble up. And I'll know it, I'll hear it, whatever. Yeah, for beginners, the written one is really helpful.
Yeah, I want to go ahead and this goes along perfectly with this week's podcast episode, which if people haven't listened, this week's podcast episode on the general podcast was with Ashley Wood. It's episode 52. And we talk about like soul lessons and the Akashic records and past lives and stuff like that. And something that Ashley said is coming up for me right now with what you're saying. And that is that a lot of times, people are like, how can you prove? How can you prove that's from your past life? How can you prove that's your inner child? How can you prove it? And our like analytical, you know, brains, our egos too, they want to know that. They want there to be solid proof for whatever it is that we think we're experiencing. But Ashley, I love what she says where she's, no, you can actually trust your imagination. Your imagination is a huge part. It's part of you, first of all. And your imagination is working with your soul to let things come up and come through you in a way that is working out for your highest good. And as you're describing, like having this dialogue with your inner child, a lot of people might be like, how do I know I'm not just imagining it or making it up? You don't. You really might be imagining it, but why would your imagination lie to you? Like, why would you think you can't trust your imagination? And I think too, that goes back to, there's like another layer under that of as children, we were told that things weren't real and that what we saw wasn't there. And so it was like, we were conditioned out of trusting our imaginations even as children. So of course, as adults, we're like, I can't trust my imagination. If I'm just making this up, like how can I prove it's real? And what if it's not? And that's, to me, that's ego, that's binary thinking. That's like trying to even talk yourself out of doing it because you see it as like superfluous and unnecessary and silly or whatever. How do you feel about the imagination?
I feel the same way. And I feel like it's a choice. Like you can either live in a fortress of certainty, and that's really what it is. It's like a fortress. It's I'm going to be so certain that I can be safe. Or you can play in, let's say, a meadow of creativity. So do you want to live in a fortress of certainty? Or do you want to play in a meadow of creativity? I would rather play in the meadow.
Same.
But there's always the fear of like the dragon's going to come and get me in the meadow. So there's that fear you have to live with. And I think we often as children, like humans do this, humans, we are wired to stay safe. So if we If we fear growing up, we look at the world and we say good, bad, wrong, whatever. If we're growing up and no one teaches us otherwise, we become this almost like, I think of the nervous system as just being like almost like concrete. We just become like concretized in this way of being in the world. And it is just, it becomes very instinctual. You ask someone like, let's brainstorm some possibilities. Let's think creatively. And they can't, because their system has been concretized. So you have to literally like chip away at those blocks and the concrete to allow there to be some fresh air to come in. And that's also where compassion needs to come in, like compassion for ourselves, but compassion for other people. Like I'm constantly the one, seemingly like the only one who has compassion for people who do bad stuff. And I know you do too, and you promote that. And there are people out there doing that, but it's pretty rare. And it's, you have to have compassion for the fact that their nervous system is like fucked up.
Amen. Circumstances. I don't think people realize this. Under the right circumstances, we are all literally capable of anything. Mm-hmm. Like any of the horrendous, atrocious things that we judge people for doing, every single one of us is capable of that. Right. You know, under the right circumstances. And so I want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything else about the inner child that you haven't said yet that you want to make sure is said before we close?
Feeling into that. I would just say that your inner child will sometimes, if you aren't parenting your inner child, if you're not accessing your inner child, they will often masquerade as the parent. And if you aren't aware that that's happening, you can become quite certain, quite confident in their leadership. So they may have become so dominant in your personality that you might not actually know that's your inner child. So that's something to really pay attention to. And you want to look for those types of phrases and thought patterns that are like me-centered. So if you're constantly thinking about, why did that person do that to me? That's a sign your inner child has taken over. So notice those thoughts, start to journal out your thoughts and start to really look at who is driving the bus. Because the inner child can become quite a strong force and fool us into thinking that our conscious self is in charge. But what's actually happened is it's just become its own parent. It's like, it's inflated. So I would really caution people to do some work around that, because it can lead you way off course. And then you're going to find it's that much harder. If you think of a child who doesn't have a bedtime, then one day you decide after years of it not having a bedtime that it's going to have one. It is going to be that much harder to get that child under control. So the sooner you start to discipline and parent your inner child and give it, you do have to have discipline with it. Like going back to the beginning of the conversation, it's not all about bubble baths and teddy bears and like hot chocolate. You have to have discipline with your inner child and say, I know this comes into play a lot of times with relationships, because our inner child will want us to be with a certain person. And our inner child will say, that person is my twin flame. That person is my soulmate. That person, I will only ever be happy with that person. That's my person. If I don't have them, I will die. That's the inner child, because they have mapped on to that person. So whenever there's some kind of if there's an extreme thought that comes into your mind, like this is reality, if there's without the presence of some skepticism or some doubt, you can be pretty sure that it's your inner child, even when it comes to love, because that's the place where our souls came here to play. Our souls came here to play in the arena of relationships. That's where our souls really grow and where our spirituality comes in. When you are mapped onto somebody, or you're locked onto somebody, and that your inner child is driving you towards them, that's when you really have to say, listen, I know you love that person. I know that you really think they're the only one for you, but I'm in charge here. And that's so hard, Lindsay, that I went through a whole phase of that where she was totally driving the bus. And I believed her. And I believed that we collectively as a system, we would die without that person. But I came to see that like she was running rampant and she needed some serious hardcore parenting.
Yeah. I see a lot of my own inner child in that place right now.
Yes.
I'm really glad that I have you to help me work through that and to do that healing. And anything that you want our circle members to know, is your relationship rebirth intensive still open for couples?
It is open. Yep, it's open. Folks can go to my website, evelynhale.com, check it out. I am going to have another offering coming out soon, which is probably going to take more of a precedent over the couples container. So if you're a couple and you're wanting to work with me, definitely check that out. But if you're a woman who is looking to deepen into her femininity and soften, and it's going to be a little bit of inner child work, but it's going to be mostly just softening and learning how to surrender, learning how to chill the fuck out. Cause we just don't know how, cause we're all like this, like gnarled up. Yeah. If that's you, then stay tuned. Cause I'm going to have an offering for women who want to drop into their feminine and inspire their man to become more masculine. Cause that's what I hear constantly is where we've got this inverted polarity. I know this episode isn't about that, but we've talked about it on the podcast where you're feeling like you're more in the leadership role and you're more taking charge and you're bossing your man around and he's just like lazy or, you know, doesn't want to take charge and is just sleep at the wheel. That's not the dynamic that you want. If you want to inspire him to change, this is going to be a program for women. So yeah, very excited.
That sounds really exciting. That sounds so good. Thank you so much for being here on this lovely bonus episode. As we were having this conversation, I was like, holy shit, maybe I should release this to the general public, but I'll hold on to it just for the circle members for now, because really good.
If you want to, you have my blessing. Whatever. Okay. Feels great.
Okay. Amazing. Thanks so much for coming on today. And I will see you soon in other places.
All right. Thanks so much, Lindsay. Bye-bye.
Bye.